First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me here. This is one of my favorite topics. So I want to talk about the effects of maternal exercise on the fetal heart. I have no relationships to disclose. Hopefully when I finish this talk, you'll be able to describe the maternal and fetal effects of engaging in exercise during pregnancy. So let's start with the maternal side of it. What adaptations do we know about? We know that the mom feels better. Chances are, is going to have less problems during delivery. She's also going to have a quicker recovery time. As far as the placenta, we know crudely there's no difference in placental weight. Especially if she exercises during the first trimester, she's going to have an increased villus surface area. So this is going to increase exchange between mom and baby. So then what goes on with the baby? How do we know whether the baby's doing okay? A lot of the markers are going to be fetal heart rate. Basically, there can be an increase, decrease, no change. A lot of these differences are due to different methodologies. So it really does depend. It doesn't tell us too much because they're across the board. Other markers of fetal well-being are going to be movements and breathing activity. And again, there's really no difference that we can discern from this. So that doesn't really tell us too much about how the baby's doing from the mom's exercise. So then we decided, okay, let the babies be born. This isn't my research. This is already previous studies. Once the baby's born, are there any differences? So again, grossly, head circumference, the length of the baby, there's no difference. Apgar scores, no difference. Some studies show that there's actually an improvement from the babies who are exposed to mom's exercise. And then the big one is going to be birth weight. That's what everybody's concerned about, right? The low birth weight babies. And really, the birth weight is going to depend. It really depends on this FIT principle. So frequency, intensity, time, type of exercise even. If she continues a high intensity type of exercise in that third trimester, the birth weight's going to be lower. Even the diet. If she picks kind of processed sugary type of carbohydrates versus whole grain good type of carbohydrates, the baby's going to have a different birth weight. And all of these birth weight effects are specifically from percent body fat. So it's either going to be a really lean baby or it's going to be a plumper baby. Now, is that good or bad? Well, we don't really know. But I'm going to answer some future benefits. This is one of my boys. This is really a hot area in this type of study, prenatal programming, and a lot of people have heard of it. So, for example, gestational diabetes, hypertension, gestational hypertension, preeclampsia, mom's stress during pregnancy, so the cortisol levels. We know that that not only has an effect on the baby immediately in the neonate, but we know it's going to affect the baby in the long run. So gestational diabetes, a person's more likely to have diabetes after they're born when they're 20, 30, 40 years old. And all of that stuff is negative, okay? I prefer to be a positive person. How many people are going to argue that exercise, aerobic exercise, is bad for you? Most people aren't. You may say that you don't like it or you don't want to do it, but you're not going to say that it's bad for you, okay? We know that cardiovascular exercise is great for us. So if we apply this prenatal programming, then why isn't it going to be beneficial to the baby? And that's really where my study comes in. So my specific aims were to determine if exercise during pregnancy is going to improve the cardiovascular autonomic system of the baby. So I looked at heart rate variability, short and long, power spectral density, and also cardiac time intervals for this pilot study at three different gestational ages. So how did we do that? My collaborators at KU Med, and we have this really cool machine called a biomagnetometer that's pictured right here on your left. And so this is the seat that the mom would sit on, and this big thermos is the sensors. And then on your right, you see the mom actually sitting in the biomagnetometer for an 18-minute recording. Okay, and then this central picture basically shows the mock-up of our sensors. We have 83 sensors on the maternal abdomen that are actually recording. So then you ask, what are we recording? What we get is called a magnetocardiogram. Most people are familiar with an electrocardiogram. That records electrical activity from the heart. Well, all electrical activity produces magnetic fields. So we're recording the magnetic fields from the electrical activity. Basically, we're recording the same thing, but in a different way, and it's a little bit more accurate, and we can get more information. So what you see up here, if I can get the mouse to work, in this component 1 and 2, this is actually mom's MCG, and then 3 and 5 are baby's MCGs, and we can get a lot more information as well, but I'll focus on the heart rate aspect. We can even separate twins, their heart rates. So some of the things I'll talk about today, where's my cursor, are going to be the heart rate. This is basically an ECG plot squashed from 18 minutes. Power spectral density, heart rate variability, red is going to be short-term, blue is going to be long-term, and then cardiac time intervals. You notice it looks very similar to an ECG. Some caveats to my data. This is my pilot data. The moms are similar in age. Now that I'm looking at more data, they're not necessarily similar in weight. You do start to see a difference in BMI with the two groups. For my pilot data, I didn't control for the pre-pregnancy fitness level of the moms. Okay, I really am not concerned with that. I really want to look at the actual pregnancy exposure to exercise. So I didn't control for any of that. I didn't control for diet or their type of exercise. They're not lab rats. I just wanted to make sure I actually had participants, and I really got a quick idea on whether this was really happening or not, whether there was a difference. As far as an exercise population, you're always going to have a subject bias. These moms are choosing to exercise. They're not lab rats. And as far as their exercise activity, at least for this pilot data, I just gave them a questionnaire to fill out on their sedentary, their physical activity, and their exercise activity. Now I'm actually verifying that with my the rest of my data. So then fetal heart rate. If I were to ask you about fetal heart rate and I took a group of adults and I exercised them and then I measured their heart rate at three different time points, would you expect that exercise to increase, decrease, or not change their heart rate? Most people are going to say their heart rate's going to go down. Their resting heart rate's going to go down. And then a group of adults not exercising, you would expect their heart rate, their resting heart rate, to not change, right? Well, we basically see the same thing in the fetal heart rate, okay? So on the x-axis, we have our three age points, 28, 32, and 36 weeks gestational age. And then on the y, we have our fetal heart rate. And in red, you can see a significant, significantly lower fetal heart rate in response to mom's exercise. This particular data has been controlled for mom's parity, baby's gender. These are all male babies that we're comparing to each other, and fetal activity state. And this is what they didn't know before. I don't want to compare really active babies to really sleepy babies. It doesn't make any sense. So this has been controlled for. The babies are all in the same activity state, and that's when you start to see differences. So how do we know that's good? Well, over here, what we have is our heart rate plot, again, kind of squashed from 18 minutes. And you notice the heart rate's going to vary with time. What we do is we apply a fast Fourier transform to this heart rate variability, and we get a power spectral density on your right. Okay, so this is going to be on the y-axis our total power, which equals our heart rate variability. So if parasympathetics are controlling the heart, that's going to lower the heart rate. Sympathetics are going to raise the heart rate. That means you have more variation in your heart rate. That's what HRV is. Okay, and then on the x-axis is going to be our frequency. So what does this mean? And again, this is previous research right here. So our power, again, on the y-axis and the frequency over here. This very low frequency we know is sympathetics. Okay, and then in the green, this is going to be a combination of sympathetics and parasympathetics. And then in the yellow, it's going to be parasympathetics. Okay. So if we were to look at a 24-week baby compared to a 36-week-old baby, you would expect the 36-week-old baby, again, this is fetus, gestational age, to have more autonomic tone, so more variability, which means more power. So you would expect this whole graph to be shifted upward, and that's what this is representing here. Okay, so then how can we apply this to my exercise-exposed babies? Well, in red, if you were to look at this exercise baby or baby exposed to mom's exercise in utero, you see that at the same age, the baby exposed to mom's exercise has an increased heart rate variability. So again, suggesting an improved autonomic maturation. And you can see it in the parasympathetic range and also in this sympathetic range somewhat. That's only one baby to one baby. So then for my pilot data, I had five controls and five babies exposed to exercise. And if you were to draw an average line, I kind of switched the lines on you, so I'm sorry, I don't want to confuse you, but the red lines are now going to be the control babies, and if you were to draw an average line, it would be around here. And then the average line for the blue babies, which are now exercised, you still see this shift. You have an increased variability when the babies are exposed to mom's exercise. Okay. So then what about the heart rate variability in and of itself? This is going to be actually comparing this R to R interval. Short term usually is going to be less than 5 minutes, whereas a long term variability is going to be greater than 5 minutes, still comparing how this R to R interval varies. Okay, we record our moms for 18 minutes, and they usually just take a nap. Other people go as long as 24 hours. We didn't do that. So what do we find? Again, looking at our three age points, 28, 32, and 36 weeks of gestational age, and then on our y-axis, we have our short-term variability. We see a significant difference in the exercisers in the red line, increased variability starting at 32 weeks. This agrees what other people have been starting to find. Autonomic innervation starts to occur somewhere around 30, 31, 32 weeks of gestational age. And here we're seeing that there's a increased maturation or increased innervation with these babies exposed to exercise. So then what about the QRS duration? I kind of focused on that one in particular for a cardiac time interval. Again, what we already know is just normally across gestational ages on this x-axis, as the baby gets older, you would expect the QRS interval on the y-axis to lengthen because the baby is now under parasympathetic control as it gets older. And as the parasympathetics are slowing down the heart rate, they're slowing down that cardiac cycle, so it's going to lengthen the QRS. Okay, we already know that happens. So then what happens to my exercise-exposed babies? So here we have an average plot from an MCG in your top left corner. And then in the bottom right corner, we have one from control babies averaged together. And so again, at the same gestational age, you look at the QRS intervals and you see a longer interval, so it's more parasympathetic tone compared to the control babies. Then we can utilize something called a Poincaré plot. This is a quantitative visual way, again, to kind of get a feel for autonomic tone. It's actually used clinically to predict disease and cardiac dysfunction. And the take-home message of these little pictures, I love pictures, I'm a visual person, are this one on your left, torpedo, good. Rocket shape on the right, bad. Okay? So what does that mean? Let me explain. How do we make these Poincaré plots? This small red line right here on your bottom left is short-term variability on this axis. And then this long red line along this axis is long-term variability. And that's how we get these Poincaré plots. We're basically plotting short-term and long-term variability to each other. Okay, so if you would imagine a person who has normal autonomic tone, they're tightly regulated, you would expect these Poincaré plots, again, to be torpedo-like and kind of tight. Whereas if it's not regulated very well by autonomics, this longer short-term and longer long-term variability, it's more spread out, okay? So again, torpedo good, rocket bad. So if you look at the very right side over here, this is going to be control babies. Immediately to the left of that is going to be babies exposed to maternal exercise. These top panels are going to be 28 gestational weeks, 32 weeks gestational age, and then the bottom are 36 weeks gestational age. And again, what you start to see is more of a tighter torpedo-like pattern for the babies exposed to maternal exercise versus a more spread out, not so regulated type of pattern for babies who are not exposed to maternal exercise. So just to wrap up, I just wanted to follow up with the ACOG guidelines. As far as I know, these are the most recent guidelines from ACOG for 2002. And they encourage all moms to exercise even every day if they want to during the pregnancy. And even if they were previously sedentary prior to the pregnancy, they still encourage them to exercise. And that's a lot looser than what they originally established. And most people are not aware of these guidelines. So really, moms can continue exercise or even start exercise during pregnancy. They just have to do what feels comfortable. Definitely make sure they eat well, they stay hydrated, they exercise in a comfortable environment. So I guess to follow up, it really is safe for moms to exercise during pregnancy, and now we're just starting to show that it's not only safe, but it's beneficial to the baby's cardiovascular system. And ultimately, I'd like to show that it's going to impact them in the long run. It's going to decrease their cardiovascular risk. We have a lot of work ahead of us, but we also have some in the ways of encouraging moms and physicians not only to know these current guidelines, but to know the current research, because not all OB-GYNs actually encourage moms to exercise during pregnancy, and they really should. Are there any questions?
I'm a personal trainer and I train pregnant quite often. So I have one right now that I just battle with her every session on what she thinks she's allowed to do, and I tell her the same things every time. It's fine, you know, I researched, I looked into it. Is there some place I can send her that maybe she'll believe someone else over me? Because I mean, she's paying me and she still doesn't believe me. So
how funny. Ooh, that's a good question. The question is basically related to what kind of resources online do we have for pregnant moms to go to basically verify that it is safe and it can be beneficial. You know what? I don't have any off the top of my head. I do know that ACOG guidelines are on the internet, so you can look that up. And if she has internet access, she can do that. And she can look up these ACOG guidelines. And she doesn't even have to go to their specific website because a lot of people post these ACOG guidelines. And I even have some of my information posted on the internet. If you type in my name and fetal heart rate, it shows this information and how it's actually starting to show that it's beneficial. So she can do that. Just do a Google search.
Yeah. Were your subjects doing low, moderate, high-intensity exercise? Were they doing weight training or aerobic exercise? How much?
Yeah, good question. Again, I didn't control for the type of exercise that they did. They just had to meet that minimum requirement by American Heart and ACSM, which is going to be 30 minutes, three times a week. And they had to continue that throughout the entire pregnancy, and most moms were plenty above that. They had to do that aerobically, but we did have some moms that participated in aerobics and weight training, and so now that I have more moms, I'm just starting to tease out what levels do we start to see a significant difference. So that's to come. Yes?
Can you look at what happened with the heart rate variability of the newborn baby and others?
The question is, did I look at the heart rate variability basically in the neonates? Yes, that's a to-be-continued story. I took a sneak peek to see if we still see this difference after the baby's born, and not that I've published the data because I'm working on the article now, but it still seems like this effect is still present after the baby's born, so that's really exciting. Good question. Oh, sure.
And that would be a really interesting piece of your study if you commented on the labor outcomes, whether it's infection or delivery.
Oh, boy. There's a lot to say about labor outcomes and fetal heart rate. And actually, to go back to, like, the physicians, I work at a medical school, so I don't want to dog on physicians or cut on them in any way. I just want to make sure that they're educated, and actually a lot of OB-GYNs are not educated on some of this information that researchers know. For example, the baby is in a different fetal activity state, so you may think that the baby's heart rate is really low and there's not much variability, but maybe it's a sleeping baby compared to an active baby. And so that's why when you really look in the data, you have to control for the baby's gender. There is a gender difference, just like the old wives' tale, and there's going to be a difference with the activity state, and that's going to be a big impact on, you know, they just do the cardiotocogram, and they say, oh my gosh, the baby's, you know, has a low variability, or the heart rate's really low, and it's like, you know what, maybe it's just in a quiet activity state, and you just have to wake it up. So it has lots of implications on that. But we're still working on some of the physicians. But all of the medical students that go through my school, they get my talk. So they know about it. They know that you need to control for these variables, and you need to think about a lot more than just, oh, heart rate, you know, variability's low. So, yeah. Any other questions? All right, thanks.
Okay, next we have Dr. Jen Lieferman discussing pregnant women's perceived barriers and facilitators related to antenatal physical activity.